Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Webinar. My name is Parker and I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer support to the speakers. Today we're joined by Safe Food and Root, and we have a full panel for you, so I'm going to hand it over to them now.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Crandall, and I am the CEO founder of Safe Food and Root. I've been a long time attendee and panelist on the Perry Johnson webinar series. Today we are super excited because we're going to be talking about why you should love risk assessments. And so we've been having great conversations with our teams to figure out how to best present this to you. And I'm very excited to introduce to you Gary Burek. He is a risk management expert, subject matter expert. He has a background in finance and risk assessment with a degree from University of Delaware in financial management and an MBA from Loyola University, Maryland. He has 40 years total experience in his career, and all of it includes risk assessment and risk management, including being a risk analyst, risk manager, chief risk officer, and an ERM pioneer and subject matter expert. His corporate experience has 18 plus years, and he founded Aperitasoft RPM3 Solutions in February of 2002. So we're super excited to have him on to have a fireside chat, basically conversation, to talk about how we can use risk assessment in our day-to-day operations, not just in the food safety realm. Again, my background, for those that do not know me, I have a Purdue food science degree of 25 years in the industry. Now it's 26. I have manufacturing experience, about 8 years of that with production supervision, quality assurance. I've written HACCP and food safety plans and done a lot of management and leadership positions. My corporate experience, I worked at corporate Kroger for 12 years. I managed mostly the supplier compliance in that time and vetted suppliers in all areas of compliance, including understanding direct imports. And I was the business lead in software development for the supplier hub that is currently being used. I'm also an FSVP expert and learned that while I was at Kroger. I founded Safe Food and Root in March of 2018, so I'm coming up on our 6-year anniversary. And just in a few weeks, I'll be the recipient of the Purdue University Distinguished Alumni Award for Food Science and for the College of Ag, and also the Food Science Outstanding Alumni. So a little humble brag, I guess, but I'm pretty excited about that. It was a complete surprise to start getting it. I've also added a few more layers to my background of being Land Betterment Corporations on their independent board of directors, as well as Omnivis Incorporated, which is a pathogen detection system in under 30 minutes. And I recently became a Clockwork Certified Partner, which is a operational efficiency certification that's similar to Lean Six Sigma principles, but not as robust. It is more catered to the small and mid-sized businesses. So what are we all doing together? And why am I interviewing Gary Burek? Basically, Safe Food and Root has partnered with Culture Advisory Group out of Canada that is managed by Paul Valder and his team. And Gary is the owner of Aperitasoft, which is a software risk assessment software that we are going to be using to do risk assessments and readiness assessments. So currently we do still offer all the same services that we've done in the past, FSVP and supplier verification compliance solutions. We do food safety consulting to regulatory and GFSI schemes, offer training, label review, but now we are also offering software as a service using this readiness assessment tool. And you'll note that there is another company there called Nisus. We are also working with their platform through the Culture Advisory Group. we're really excited to start offering these as services. We also will be doing diligence assessments for food safety using those software. So a Paradisoft software, I'm currently designing a diligence assessment for that program. Okay, so let's get to know you a little bit, and I'll turn it over to Parker to jump in and do the poll question for us, because we want to get to know our audience and see who are we talking to. Okay, somebody start talking because I can't see the polls, so I don't know how we're doing on responses.
Hey, we're coming in like 50% voted right now, so I'm going to leave it up for another minute or so.
Okay. All right, you might have to read to me the results when they get there because I am still not seeing any of that. But you
there
left
they are. Results are up.
All right. So can you read them out to me so I can see, because the audience can see them, but I cannot.
Sure, I can read them to you. It's 8% CEO founder, 29% manager director level, 54% food safety quality professional, and 8% other.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Parker. Good to know. So we have a lot of managers in the audience, and we have a lot of food safety professionals, which is not a surprise. That's our typical audience at Perry Johnson Registrars. And so I'm excited. I want to share with you, you know, normally in food safety, we're pretty used to food safety risk assessments. And so for the food safety professionals in the audience, you're probably wondering, you know, how can we talk about this differently? And why am I bringing it up as a risk assessment? So in food safety, we're used to doing them. And we identify the hazards that are associated with foods and with the process and the facility that we're in. And then we typically do a rank risk-based, risk-based approach to the probability of that happening, and then determine, is there enough risk to need to mitigate a hazard through some type of kill step? And usually that's something like cooking, or it might be, as we are now doing preventive controls, we might be looking at, is there a way in the supply chain to manage it, the allergen management program, the sanitation program, et cetera? So that's a normal thing. We are used to doing that. But there are a lot of other ways to do risk management, and people tend to avoid them because they don't really understand them fully. And so, it's difficult to stay objective when you're evaluating situations, when you're looking at risk, because it could mean that there's a monetary risk associated with it, or it might mean that you have to deal with something that you've been avoiding. And so those sometimes are things that are hard. The other thing is there's a lot of people that have a lack of knowledge how to use risk to evaluate properly. So you can actually use risk to make decisions and the probability of them to make decisions. And sometimes when we don't understand why a boss, and we can use these as plenty of examples out there, when a boss makes a decision and you just don't understand why did they go this route, it seems like a risky thing to ignore this situation. And we can all have numerous different examples of that happening, I am sure. Like there would be a whole nother panel discussion on what decisions did our bosses make that we disagree with. However, sometimes they have more information and they're doing a risk assessment that we're just not aware of. And then the other piece of it is the lack of skill to use risk for prioritizing those actions. So I'm gonna turn over and ask some questions of Gary, who is our subject matter expert, 40 year plus professional on risk assessment, and he looks at it from all different angles. And I want him to start teaching us a little bit more about it. So I'm gonna turn it over to Gary and ask, now that we've gotten to know that, we understand, right, let's first talk about it. What is risk, Gary?
Well, that's a great question, Jennifer. I was asked the question yesterday. I was in a initial meeting, introductory meeting with someone, and they asked me the question, well, Gary, what do you consider what you do for a living? And my response was, I'm a linguist. And they chuckled. And I'm like, well, what do you mean that you're a linguist? And I'm like, well, I mean, if you think about risk management, there are so many different paths to try to understand our risk. People are using different terminologies to accomplish the same end. So where you and I might say, I want to find out what the probable events would be that would bring rise to a loss in my organization. So you might call that a probable risk event. And I might talk to Paul Valder, and Paul will say, no, that's a risk, Gary. That's a risk, right? So the challenge then is, how do we get on the same language? How do we get to the same nomenclature so that when we are addressing these things, everybody knows what we're talking about?
Right.
So if you're going to ask me to step all the way up onto the mountain and say, well, what is risk? My favorite word or synonym is uncertainty.
Okay, that's a really great way to look at it.
And there's a big reason for that, right? Because if you're looking at trying to accomplish goals, how much risk is there to getting it done? If I'm trying to be profitable, how much risk is it to getting done? That's the term risk. But that is not a single path to that answer. That's where the whole risk assessment thing becomes important.
I love the way you approach that. And as a food safety professional, I can say many food safety professionals in my career they're risk adverse. We are always going down the path of the worst case scenario. Because that's our job, right? So our goal is to prevent people from getting sick and to prevent them from dying. Like, we have lots of examples in the food industry of that happening. And so we're very risk adverse, but there are times when risk, you know, that uncertainty might not be related to that. And, you know, it's like, what's the probability of it, and understanding that. So when you're doing, you know, you have uncertainty and you're looking at it from that perspective, what do you do as a risk assessment? Like, what is a risk assessment? What is appropriate to do?
So, you know, being an ERM guy, when we were talking about food safety standards, for instance, I would say that's all part of the Enterprise Risk Management Program.
Yes.
And many of the audience out there would say, well, what are you talking about? Right? How can that be? You know, I'm trying to be compliant with the standard to have assurances, right? They'll use that word, to have assurances. Well, if you really think about it, when you're looking at standards, or you're looking at regulation, or you're looking at any of those methods, somebody somewhere identified what the risks were, the events, the things we're worried about. And then they figured out what you need to have in place so that does not happen.
Right.
So they're kind of doing it in a backwards approach. They're saying, let's go see if you've got the things in place that make sure these bad things don't happen. And really what they're trying to do is to see if you've got exposure to certain probable risk events.
Sure. Right?
Now, here's your challenge. They can't be complete. That's a wonderful way to begin, and it's it's an essential part of everyone's approach to risk. But you also have to go around the other way and say, well, what else could happen that maybe the standard has yet to cover?
Yes. Yeah.
So there's another angle to this whole thing that needs to be looked at. So risk assessment needs to be looked at, pathways that lead you to what are the events that would bring rise to a loss. And I can get there through known standards, or I can get there through executive knowledge, but either path leads me to what that risk might be.
Yes.
And this identification is the most important part of this exercise. What are they? What are the things that we're worried about?
So the identifying the risk. So I'm looking at, again, kind of taking it back to our food safety perspectives, because law requires us to look at some. So like for import regulations, and for preventive controls, which are two laws that we have to follow in the US, we have to go check what is the FDA guidance of risk on this appropriate food. So if it's, you know, like this category of food, I can pick numerous, so let's just pick baked goods. They will tell us exactly what type of risks to look for. However, what you're saying is we have to also identify risks that are that we don't necessarily see on that list. And that might be something related to the risks associated with that facility, things that we know happen in that facility. Am I interpreting it correctly?
Unique environmental issues to one facility that are not on that list coming from the FDA.
Sure. And you know your facility better than anyone. You should.
Yeah. But so we can understand why risk assessment is important, but we also need to understand that just taking one method doesn't mean you're safe.
Right. Absolutely. Okay.
I've heard so many people say things where after Enron, when they came up with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and they started doing all these risk management things, and then bad things kept happening. Why?
Right.
Well, because if you give a prescribed approach to looking at certain types of risk, and you mandate that on an organization, 9 out of 10 times, they're going to do that and only that, rather than think about this broadly as a value-based concept.
Yes. So there's
when you're doing food safety, when I look at you, Jennifer, and I think about, oh my gosh, you're a value creator.
Okay. Right? I'm listening.
and why? Because you're managing risk to brand. You're managing risk to reputation. You're managing all kinds of things that aren't necessarily specifically prescribed on an FDA list.
Absolutely. You're bringing up a valid point, and I'm going off script just a second. There is argument out there, and I've shared this on the Perry Johnson webinars in the past, and I also share it in lectures whenever I talk to students, but there is argument out there that following a food safety standard actually creates this problem in the industry because it's so scripted that it takes away the ability for us to think outside of that scheme, outside of those requirements. And what you just said really reiterates it as well, you know, that 9 out of 10 times when you have a prescribed approach, that's the only thing you're going to do. And I think in food safety, it's so important because we rely on government data, we rely on scientific data to tell us the risks that are associated with foods. But then it does kind of put our blinders on. We're checking the boxes and making sure that everything's okay there, but we aren't necessarily seeing the other potential risks, the emerging things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And even though the law does push us to do that, to think about it, but conceptually doing it inside that bubble in your HACCP team or in your food safety team and in a cross sector of the organization, we have limited resources to be able to stay focused if we're not tapped in. And so I think of like our clientele as small and mid-sized businesses. They don't always have that type of resource. So then they're relying on companies like us to be able to help them identify those risks as well.
Precisely.
So I you kind of expressed and answered the third question already about like why are they important. So let's jump into like how do you personally use risk assessments for yourself?
Everyone is constantly in risk assessment mode.
Interesting.
Okay. I shared with you that I just had a total hip replacement done 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Right. 3 weeks ago, when we were talking about the risk of me walking from my car to the house, right, mm-hmm. I would not be identifying a whole lot of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I see a lot of exposure. You know, I can't put all the weight on my leg. I have to have some kind of support, whether it's a cane or a walker, you know, while I'm going through recovery. And now I've got this apparatus I have to use. So I'm going down the sidewalk and there are grooves that it hangs up in.
Yes.
Or somebody has a loose carpet laying on the floor that it could cause a trip hazard. But all of us apply risk assessment to our daily lives, whether it's simple things like that, or it's how we're dealing with money, or how we're deciding on recreation for the weekend.
Sure. Yes, I actually, Gary and I had a good conversation about hip replacement because I have to do some, I have some hip surgery in my future. And one of the things I tell my trainer is I have to choose if I'm going to train today or if I'm going to walk my dogs. And, you know, I'm not old enough in my brain to have to deal with that kind of stuff. And so it's really frustrating. But now it's becoming that if I want to not lay down all day tomorrow, I have to make that choice. I can't do both until I have the surgery and get through the healing process.
That is a beautiful word picture you gave there, because that is what risk management really is about. Trade-off decisions.
Trade-off decisions. Good.
Where we've got a risk to something going off the rails, right? I can choose to spend money to assure that it's going to stay on the rails, or I can roll the dice and say, most likely we'll be fine. Somebody has to make that decision. But the information needed to make that decision is why we do risk assessment. It's not to comply with a regulation.
That's right.
It's to drive decision-making, which goes back to what I said earlier, creates value.
Yes. So another way that I applied risk assessment after our first conversation, I tell my friends and I even post on social media about it, that the first time Gary and I spoke, I felt smarter in 30 minutes. And I immediately applied the risk assessment to my to-do list. So I was like, okay, I have this to do. What's the impact if I don't do it? And we'll talk more about negative and positive impact in a few slides. But you know, like I was able to apply it to my to-do list, and that helped me prioritize what I needed to do first. And it was so simple, but at the same time, I was just like, I've never approached this that way. I usually just have a checkoff list and I approach it. You know, I somewhat assess like what's easiest to get done and knock off my list, but I've not looked at it from a risk approach. And I really thought that that was a clever new use for me. So, well, let's jump into the next section and talk more about the enterprise risk management, or as we know, ERM, and how does risk assessment fit into an ERM system or approach?
Enterprise risk management mandates that you go through the risk management process, which it includes assessing risk. Organizations take on different frameworks to do this. Some take very much a top-down approach to this assessment. Others a bottom-up. The whole purpose of this now is to have a portfolio of these risks that I can be managing, understanding, and taking action to on an ongoing basis. So if you can think about, you're going back to your day-to-day life, there are portfolios of hazards and risks that you're concerned with throughout your day. You're taking action to manage all these different things. With ERM, what we're saying as an organization, we need to reset, reevaluate on a periodic basis to see what's changed.
Kind of a project management approach to risk.
It's very much like Lean Six Sigma, or was it OPM? Was that the operational project management?
Yes, PMP.
A lot of those methods are all very similar, and ERM really adopted those concepts. The only difference was, rather than looking at a constraint or an obstruction to productivity, you're looking at a probable risk event.
Yes.
And that event is what is going to cause the disruption. Now, if we want to be getting into the anatomy of this a little bit, when I know what this event is, then it's sort of like in the center of a bow tie. And many people in the audience have done bow tie analysis, but these events have two different sides to them. The left side is the causal side. So this is where we start getting into factors, right? What are things that could cause this event to happen? Mm-hmm. To bring rise to it happening. And then if it does happen, on the right-hand side, I can talk about how that would affect my organization.
Makes sense. I'm totally taking notes while we're talking.
So if you can think about those types of things, this is where that whole language thing gets to be interesting, right? People will often call factors risks and risks factors, and they get them all mixed up.
Yeah. We trip on our words a lot too. So mm-hmm. I know, even myself, I do this often where I feel that I understand what I'm trying to say, but I sometimes need a translator,
I was training in Monterrey, Mexico last year. And I was training on how to take a quantitative and analysis approach to risk assessment. And a question came up from somebody. He said, well, wait a minute, if you're saying that there are causes to events, but couldn't an event cause another event? And I said, yes. But does it make mm-hmm. it less of an event on its own? It might be a cause to event two, but it's its own event with its own causes in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the world blew up on him, right?
You know, because then how do you go about doing, because now you have the risk if I have this happen mm-hmm. and is the new cause of a new risk. And now I have to evaluate if both risks happen, then this, you know, the causes. Right.
So this is what we try to do with ERM, take this portfolio view of these risks and see how they're interconnected and interrelated. Because if I can understand an absolute root cause and can manage that one root cause, I might be able to avoid or eliminate a whole host of risks downstream.
Right. So
when you and I talked originally, that's what I told you about food safety. I think this perfectly fits this model, right? Mm-hmm. If you're taking care of the right things early, the things downstream don't become a problem to you.
That's right. So that's a big way that I describe HACCP versus the preventive controls plans that we now have to do due to regulation. So I kind of use like HACCP is the last point in the process that you can control the hazard and you control it there. And that's mm-hmm. your main, what we call critical control point. In preventive controls, you're controlling it every step of of the entire process. So you're managing it and trying to stop it from even coming in the door if it's associated with your raw materials, mm-hmm. and then managing it each step of the way too. So it's very much a similar process, but I think it's really important for us to, again, we have a lot of food safety professionals on the call, but when you're looking at it from a corporate level, from an enterprise risk management, food safety is one sliver of this pie that I think, we get tunnel vision in our roles if we're not careful and don't understand the other risks that the association is going through or the organization.
Right. How does food safety relate to some other key risks to the organization?
Yeah. And we'll talk about some of that.
A value creator, or you could be finding yourself to be a potential obstacle just by having to answer that question.
Oh, you just hit their hearts, because that's one thing that as a food safety professional we have to do is we sometimes, we're doom and gloom in our approach. And so we do become an obstacle of getting things done. And it's that risk adverse behavior and mindset that we have that we have a hard time with that flexibility because we are so fear-based on what will happen instead of trying to mitigate it and work together as a team on how to prevent what our known risks are. And construction's a great way to look at it. Like you're expanding a company, maybe a facility, and you have construction going on. A food safety person would rather not do that kind of construction if they didn't have to, or do it on a day that the production's not running to prevent cross-contamination. Correct. However, you walk into any facility that's doing construction, they're a lot of times running production really near it. And so then it's like, well, how how are they making those decisions to prevent cross-contamination, and where are they getting that mindset? And sometimes you'll walk in and notice the maintenance team and the the supervisory team are having conversations, but they're forgetting to include the food safety professional in the building. And so it's really important both directions at that point to have
It's interesting the way you're describing this. It's like, do you remember the movie called National Treasure?
Yes.
With, was it Nicolas Cage,
I guess? Yep. I just watched that over the holidays.
Now, if you remember, there was a set of, they found a set of spectacles that were apparently Benjamin Franklin's, that had these different colors to them. And when they put them on just right, they could see the map to the treasure.
Yes.
You have to think of enterprise risk or this enterprise risk philosophy as kind of like putting on those goggles. You're seeing how things interrelate that you didn't see before. And by doing that, senior management need to start to include at the table people that belong there, such as food safety.
Right.
Right. And food safety needs to raise their game, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because they have a lot more to offer.
Yeah.
And so that's the way you need to think about enterprise risk, is interconnectivity, how it all interrelates into the overall organizational strategy, goals, and business processes. And
absolutely.
And you know, we're all part of the cogs in that wheel. I've always thought of ERM as being very much an umbrella concept. Many will debate me on this, but I believe it really has a big tent, and we're all part of it.
I would agree with that from my perspective. I mean, like, I have a compliance background, and most of it is food safety. However, I was engaged in ethical and sustainability and legal compliance when I was at Kroger, and I always looked at it as well as an umbrella from compliance perspective. And I did try to, it gave me insight of the risks that we had and how we have to make decisions to keep moving forward, regardless of the compliance in the internal company. You know, we make steps to improve it the entire time. So it's always a work in progress. And I think you said it earlier, it's never finished, right?
No,
so
it's never finished. And
you are always doing risk.
The world keeps changing around us, right? And everything needs to be able to adapt as that is happening. And I think having these kinds of processes in place make you more resilient as an organization.
Absolutely.
You're looking, right? Yeah. You're looking and adapting on an ongoing basis.
Yes. Okay, well, let's jump into, I have a poll question, and I'm going to put the Perry Johnson team to work, because I'm going to ask, do you currently use risk assessments in your operation, yes or no? So when you respond to that, but if you say yes, can you also go into the chat box and explain how you use the risk assessments in your facility? And I'm assuming and hopeful that most food safety people will say that they're using it in food safety, but if you're using it in other ways, we would love to hear that.
All right, we have the pull up right now. I'm gonna leave it for another 15 seconds or so.
Okay. And then don't forget, once your poll is closed, because I don't know if you'll have access to the chat until it closes, but once it closes, if you answered yes, please jump in and say how you're using it. And that's in the, you have a chat section that you can send to everyone.
All right, I'm gonna close the poll up. It looks like we have some responses in. It's about 87% yes, 13 no.
Okay.
I'm keeping an eye on the chat right now.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate that.
That's very encouraging.
Well, my hope, and I'm guessing based on the percentages that we had, Gary, that most of the group is going to be saying they're using it in food safety as well. Before we jump into evaluate impact, I do want to see, you know, because you're consulting with your company, overall, are you seeing that companies lack an ERM system?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Companies claim they do things, but they're not really doing them.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, even your conversation's making me look at it from our perspective. Like, we have projects, but honestly, I don't, like, we're not doing risk in that same thought pattern. So it makes me want to improve our process as well. And so I'm imagine a lot of people will be saying the same thing.
So I was at a seminar one time, and there was an expert in the panel, and they're talking about their experience with their organization and how they were evolving enterprise risk. And they made a claim. He said, you know, when we got started with this, we knew of about 200 risks. Today, we now know of 5,000 risks in the organization.
Oh, my word. Wow.
I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think that's an effective ERM program? Or do you think that they have lost their way?
To me, too much information is hard to manage. So I would say that they're overkill to a degree.
They fell into the trap of you know, knowledge is power, I need lots of lists, but nothing was actionable.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that what I talked about earlier about people putting in factors as risks and so forth was part of that. So when they began to look at their ERM program, risk identification without judgment was their core culture. The problem with that is that there is a difference between a risk and a factor.
Yeah. Okay.
And well, so, you know,
is that going to lean into the next topic of discussion with evaluating impact?
Sure. Now, evaluation methodologies can take different approaches. So, the most common out there are folks that use scales. So they will typically create an algorithm that would be likelihood times impact, and then create an overall score for their organization. Now, if you remember back when we were talking about the bow tie, if an event occurs, it's going to have an impact on my business. Understanding what those things are important to being able to determine what that level of impact might be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are big proponents of going quantitative with this. So Boeing, for many years, has used something they call the PERT method, a PERT model for statistical modeling. And rather than doing likelihood scale of 1 to 5 and impact scale of 1 to 5, they've gone as far as saying, what's the probability of the event occurring? And they come up with 3 different quantitative, in dollars terms, impact scenarios. And they let a Monte Carlo simulation engine drive out the statistical outputs. Now, the power of that is that now when I'm looking at that output, I'm seeing an exposure, let's say it's put in the food safety context, that if I get impacted by this particular food safety risk, and you can fill in the blank, being the expert in that area, then I could see a loss or a financial loss to my organization to $500,000 next year.
Yeah.
So now, that going back to those trade-off decisions we were talking about, it makes it a lot easier to say, well, doesn't it make sense for us to spend $10,000 to bring that $500,000 down to $1,000?
That's right. Yeah, and you know, we'll talk about that in the case study too. So I have some examples that I think at the end that we'll talk through. In interest of time, I do want to just ask, can you explain positive or negative impact so that people understand, like, you're quantitatively, but when you're
right, so going back to our ERM portfolio, right, you can have impacts that have both a positive or a negative effect on the organization. So something could happen, but it could actually create an opportunity for you. Great story. I I heard this story one time. I don't know if it's true, but it's a great story to pass on. Everyone feel free, but please put the non-disclosure on there that I don't know if this is true or not. But the story goes that Augie Bush of the Anheuser-Busch family, we're going back a long time ago, okay, is in his in his limousine on the way to the office. And he's looking out the window and noticing that there are a lot of Budweiser cans laying in the gutters. So he gets to the office. He's very distraught by this. He calls his executive team together. And he says, guys, we've got to do something. Budweiser is becoming the brand of bums and derelicts. All I saw was Budweiser cans littered all over the city in the curbs on the way in the office. So his team, they all went away to try to figure out how they're going to address this. Right. So this is obviously a risk to Budweiser, right?
Yeah.
They have a reputational issue going on here, and Augie needs it resolved. So he goes to the marketing people, of course, and they're like, well, we need to rebrand ourselves. We need to get Budweiser out of the hands of the folks that would be litterers. So they're talking about changing pricing, changing the brand look, a full-blown advertising campaign. It was an enormously expensive campaign to do this. Sure. The operations guys come in very in a smug tone and said, boss, we just need to pick them up. And he said, well, what are you trying to say? Are you being smart, Alex? He said, no, we went and did our analysis. If we can go and get our customers themselves to pick these cans up and bring them back to us, we can create recycling centers and save 5 cents a can or a half $1 billion a year.
To reinvest.
So the opportunity side of this was we can trim cost by leveraging what's already happening and then let our customers deal with it, versus trying to completely change it all, which what the marketing people would have done.
Right.
Two different ways of looking at the same event. That's
yeah, good. Very unique. And I just saw another one, and I'm curious your thought on it. Domino's Pizza has been advertising snow removal. And they're looking at it like they can't get, I'm assuming, and I'm going to put my risk management hat on and think, okay, they're seeing.
Now what state is this in? Because in Maryland, that would not be happening.
I'm in Indiana, and I'm watching it on stream, so I'm not sure where their intended audience is, but my assumption is Indiana, right? Okay. So they're saying, we are doing snow removal for you. And I don't know what the full breadth of the service is, but I just imagine that they're trying to say, I can't get my pizza delivered to you and you're not going to get it on time or meet our metrics. Snow is in the way. So why don't we just also remove the snow at a slight cost difference, and then we'll be able to give more, you know, get more pizza to the door.
That's almost the same exact use case,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. And I have to say, Domino's lately has been very good in how they're managing their strategic risk.
Absolutely. Yeah, because they have some other things going on too. Like they're offering a free pizza in an emergency. So you can have, yeah, like if you sign up for their app, you can, and I don't have any stock in Domino's, so disclaimer there. But I just noticed that they also have, they're putting an app out there and saying, you know, we'll offer you free pizza emergency one time if you need it, if you just sign up for the app. So we are getting really close to the top. So I'm going to scoot through some more questions, okay, and then we'll get to the case study. So how can risk management help us better prioritize? I think we've kind of talked a little bit about this, but around our compliance efforts around a standard. So I want to kind of bring it back to our core audience, who are looking at, I need to get compliant to what my customer requirements are. Can they use risk management to help them better prioritize those efforts?
Well, absolutely. I mean, but if they're taking a risk view, so rather than not a compliance view, but a risk view, mm-hmm, and they can understand And maybe I should step away for a second, Jennifer. If you're an advanced or mature compliance officer, you should be able to run the lines from compliance back to the risks that compliance is asking you to do. So you should already know what those risks are. So if I can then have a broader risk assessment to assess the risks before compliance, I can then make a determination which one of my compliance efforts are most critical.
Sure.
It's like taking an inherent risk view of the organization before you decide which compliance efforts you will do.
Right.
I once saw an assessment done for cybersecurity. And in the cybersecurity, they were using a known standard, the CIS 18, the version 8 standard. And the first question was, did you implement this control? It was either fully implemented, partially, or not at all, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second question was, well, what if you did not implement it? How much exposure or risk are you putting yourself in, the organization in, by not doing it? Now that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because now what they're saying is that if it is a very risky situation and I don't comply, I should prioritize all my efforts on those guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's extremely low risk and I have not complied, it's not the top priority.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That's exactly what I'm currently doing with some projects that we have in Safe Food and Root. So I'm assessing the risk and determining the probability of the risk and the negative impact it might happen, you know, if we ignore that risk, what the negative impact will be. So I'm really trying to improve my behavior. So what you just described is what I'm trying to do internally. So what, like, did that help that company? I assume it helped that company.
Oh, immensely. Prioritize. Yeah, right out of the gate, they know where they need to put their efforts, right?
Yeah.
And also understand that these are a high priority because they're a high risk as well. So that it puts a little bit more urgency on compliance on those areas where you have higher inherent risk.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into evaluation a little bit more. And so, you know, how would we go about evaluating those risks? Like, what you just gave an example. So can you reshare that example and maybe some other ways?
So that example would be, I'm looking at it from a compliance perspective here, but say a food safety standard. I would be looking at the level of compliance on a food safety standard as one dimension. And the other dimension is, how much inherent risk am I putting my organization in if I do not comply with that?
Yes.
What's interesting about that question is that one element could be that auditors think of this very highly and you're going to get in a lot of trouble, right?
Right.
The other side of it is, in my organization, I really just don't have the exposure to make this control so important to me.
Right.
So I can now better prioritize by multiplying the two together. Say you have a score of 1, 3, and 5 on implementation and a 1 to 5 score on risk. I now have a max score of a 25. So anything that is in the 25s and 20s and 15 score range, I'm dealing with those things first.
Right. That makes sense. So using a multiplier effect, because the risk assessments that we're told to do in food safety, some people use that scoring factor, but others just use like high and high, medium, low kind of thing, and they're not doing it from a quantitative perspective, but they might do it from.
You want to have some way to push out where my exposure and my priorities need to be. And another approach to this, like I mentioned before, you know, if I can point back to what the key risks are that compliance people are asking for, okay, and I can then allow room for some ad hoc risk identification, and now apply a likelihood times impact score on the risks.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to be then mapping those risks to those compliance areas, same approach, right? Those which have high risk and those compliance requirements that align with my higher risk should be the highest priority.
So I want to make sure I heard that right, because again, I'm taking notes and learning. So if I'm looking at the compliance as one multiplying factor, and then the impact if I don't comply, and then the likelihood of that impact occurring if I don't comply. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, so then you'd be multiplying all three of those together, and then the highest score is your number one focus.
But now you're getting another element, right? You're looking at a likelihood of there being an issue or not, right? You're bringing that into the equation. And then I mentioned before, you can go full-blown quantitative if you want to and look at each risk and say, what's the probability of the risk occurring, right, first? And then if it occurs, how bad would it be to me?
Right.
In dollars terms. So now I've got the risks organized in a priority list. If I know how my compliance efforts align to those risks, then I can know which compliance effort should be first versus last.
That makes sense. Okay, so we are really close. I do want to invite Chris. I saw your post to the audience if anyone has any questions. So keep me posted if anybody has jumped in on questions. The case study that I put, we've kind of talked to it already. Mm-hmm. And so I do want to just kind of jump in and say, okay, like, let's talk about one situation example. So like, you're going for a standard, you're making the marketing decision, I want to go for the standard. And so do you prioritize getting the certification or not, and why? And so this is kind of looking at it from that holistic ERM perspective more than the compliance to the standard.
Right.
And so I would look at it like my case study would be, first, you need to understand your gaps to the standard as part of your information that you're collecting, right? So like, you would want to do a gap assessment. How close am I to it? Mm-hmm. What's the impact of those certification requirements to my business financially? What's the risk if I don't get it? So the impact if I decide not to get it. And so this is usually my marketing ploy to people to go ahead and get one of the GFSI audit schemes, because many companies that are not certified are not even considered as part of the bid process for private label in any of the larger organizations. So the Krogers, the Targets, Walmarts, they don't even want to include you in their bid process unless you have one of these standards, because then they know you have basic set of guidance that you're following.
They're going down that causal chain again, right? I'm not certified. And since I'm not certified, then you just created a new event. I do not qualify to bid.
Yes. Yeah. So that was kind of my case study from a food safety perspective. But again, it's not the same as if I don't mitigate this, you know, kill step, if I don't do this kill step to make sure that I'm cooking the food properly. And I'm so like, there's several little nuances through getting compliance to mm-hmm. these requirements or to regulatory compliance as well. Like, if you don't, so we have a saying in the industry, if it's not documented, it didn't happen. And so the impact of not documenting, if you don't have a documentation process, you don't have standard operating procedures, you don't have policies in place, which are what these schemes request, right? So if you don't have that in place, then you're kind of out the door. Okay, I see that I've got 5 minutes, so let's do one more poll question because I'm running out of time. This is such a fabulous conversation. So how much did this webinar help you with your understanding of risk assessments? And I will let Parker take over.
Yep, I just started the poll, so we'll let it run for a little bit.
Okay. It's amazing when you start talking about risk, you can talk for hours about it.
I know, it's so easy to, and I can apply it so much. I think I heard Chris jump in too. Did you jump in to say something, Chris?
I sure did. While we're looking at the poll, also had a couple of questions come in from the audience. I thought we could just pull a double duty here. Can your risk assessment tools identify root cause and evaluate continual improvements?
Absolutely. The risk management process itself lends itself to identifying root cause and then actually gives you the mechanisms to correct those things and show how that changes your whole risk profile. So yes, the methodologies and the automation that we're bringing to bear provide the solution to all those things you're asking for.
Fantastic. And then a follow-up question to that. So since the audience today is a lot of QA people with, you know, no real budget of their own, how do you convince a boss or, you know, a team to spend the money to better manage ongoing risk levels? Do you have any, I guess, common things that you've seen work out in the marketplace?
Jennifer, you want to tackle that? Or you want me to?
You go ahead. I'll jump in more.
I would say we mentioned the quantitative method before. If you can assess risk in dollars terms, that is the language of the C-suite. If they can see the cost benefit of doing versus not doing, it gets their attention. The key to that is the inputs can't be your own. They have to be management's input. They need to be the ones giving you the data that the Monte Carlo simulation engine drives. And by the way, the tools we use that Jennifer was talking about earlier already have Monte Carlo simulation engines built in. So it can be done. The other methodology, and it's always the tough thing in risk management, is buy-in, is connecting those dots, right? Making sure they understand that food safety is not a standalone compliance problem. It relates to revenue. It relates to fines and costs and other issues in operations. So that properly knowing that not doing something can lead to lower revenue or higher cost is an important distinction that needs to be made. Those dots must be connected.
That's a fantastic answer. So results of the poll, 74% learned a lot today. We've got 26% of the audience that found it was helpful, but still trying to wrap their head around it. So do you have any last words or I guess talk a little bit about how they can follow up with you if they have any questions that they didn't get a chance to ask today?
Yeah, well, this is a perfect segue to the slide that I pulled up. So we have created the Culture Advisory Group, Safe Food and Root, and ApparataSoft has created this mini assessment for you to try. So if you scan this QR code or go to the link that is provided underneath the email, you will get asked for your contact information, and then we will send you a mini assessment to fill out for your organization. It's free. It will absolutely take you through some of these risks that we are talking about. It's not a food safety one. It's actually leadership, finance, operations, and marketing risks that we're just helping you kind of have a higher level point of view. And then you can get an idea of how the tool works. The email, just as a heads up, will come from ApparataSoft@rpm3solutions.com. So make sure that's in your safe senders safe senders list so that you can receive it, but also check your junk mail just in case. And then we'll reach out that way. Or we're also happy, and we'll send this link. I think I put that link in the chat. If Chris can add it into the chat for the audience, that'd be fantastic. Then the other way to connect with Safe Food and Root so that we can talk more about how to build the risk assessment tool around your certification programs. So we already have one launched for VRCGS, and we're working on SQFI and the FSSC 22000 versions. And so if you want more information about that, reach out to Hebe, our Director of Business Development, and we will be happy to start that conversation as well.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank everyone on the panel today. Thank you so much for the great content. Look forward to, you know, many more of these in the future. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to either Perry Johnson Food Safety or to directly to Safe Food and Root or ApparataSoft. Thank you so much for your time today and have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary. Really appreciate the conversation.
Oh, it's an honor to be here, Jennifer. Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. Again, I feel smarter after hanging out with you.
Great job, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, I think we're wrapped up. So people are topping off, and we'll see you on the other side.
See you on the other side.
Were there changes made to the assurance platform? Could you discuss that a little bit?
No, so the assurance platform is our public register. So when certification bodies come on board, they have to, you know, register. We have to have all their details to monitor them on our assurance platform. The qualification of the auditors are all monitored through us, through our assurance platform. So it's a great big database, if you like, that we keep track of all our partners, our registered partners, the qualification of our partners, the qualification of our auditors, and the audits. So all the audits are uploaded. They have to meet certain specifications. We have to ensure that they're done appropriately. So it's our way of monitoring, really, the quality of our partners, such as Perry Johnson. And as you know, Perry Johnson has to sort of upload everything into the assurance platform. It's not always smooth sailing.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I know a lot of that is really the back end, you know, logistics of how the process works. Yeah. You know, I don't think that it's a customer accessible database.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. But through the same data that's available on our public register. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about on-site, it's almost coming back. So, you know, we have to ensure the good quality of the data and the audits going in. We have to make sure that the audits are kept up to date. And then that public register, which is so important for our certified organizations to show their customers that they're certified, that's going to become accessible through on-site. So there'll be a portal so that you can receive information on the validity of your customer certificates through the assurance platform. So that's, you know, it's kind of connected to the same thing.
Certainly. Well, fantastic. Again, thank everyone, you know, for your time today. Jacqueline, thank you so much, you know, for representing FSSC today and joining Perry Johnson. If there are any questions after the presentation ends, you know, feel free, please send them in. We'll coordinate with Jacqueline and make sure everything gets answered. So with that, look for upcoming webinars. I know we have got one February the 14th coming up is going to be based on risk assessments and, you know, loving yourself through risk assessments. So kind of a reach, but it is food safety. So, you know, really looking forward to that one. It's going to be a good event. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Have a great afternoon, everyone.
All right, great to see you. Bye.